fish, fish, fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Oh, and how does it feel? You lucky little devils. You were, you know, you had a week off. I wasn't here. You didn't have to put up with it, but I'm back. Yep. Oh, yeah, getting old. Man, I'll tell you what. This will perk up all the millennials. There's free stuff on the horizon. You know, if you're under 20, you know, free, okay, and in the form of a free fishing weekend. And what that entails is if you're in saltwater, brackish water, which is the same thing in the eyes of the law. In the eyes of the law, you only have freshwater and saltwater. So anywhere in freshwater, whether you go out in a boat or go down to the pier, you do not need a license saltwater. Anywhere in saltwater. I misspoke. I screwed up. I have the dog going crazy on me. So,
that's why we have Robert here.
That's, yes, somebody's got to do this. Robert's over there in the chair across from me. RJ in command and control, and Fish and Frank here saying the wrong thing as usual. But free saltwater fishing weekend, June 1st and 2nd, which is this weekend. So, you know, if you want to go, you know, you're from out of town and you want to take somebody out who's not an avid fisherman, it's a great time to do it. Go out and do some stuff.
Perfect time to do it.
Yeah, Robert, what's the number one fish to go catch that you can eat? What's the number one catchable, edible fish right now? The single best bet?
I would pick mangrove snapper.
Really?
Yeah. Just because you can catch it both from the shore or from a boat, inshore or out in the Gulf of Mexico. So anybody can target it, you know.
Gotcha.
And they're fine eating. They're really good eating, actually.
Very good eating fish. Not hard to clean. You flay them out nice, and they're actually very tasty.
Yeah.
Is this because Lashley Pier kind of lit up with them? Guys were catching 10 to 14-inch mangrove snappers there at Lashley Pier?
Yeah. Yeah, Lashley Pier, even up in Nokomis off the jetties, they've been catching a few in that, you know, 10 to 12-inch range. I haven't heard of any really big ones, but some of those night fishermen do pick up that 14 or 15-incher because those big ones get a little less guarded when the lights go out.
Well, that's the reason they got to be big.
Exactly.
Is they've been much more stealthy than their brother who didn't get to be big.
Exactly. You know, and I'm hearing of a few in Boca Pass, but I'm hearing of more down in Captiva Pass. And then, you know, if you want to go to any of the nearshore reefs, they're still running in that 10 to 14-inch range. But once you get out like 15 to 20 miles out, I've got guys that are catching 3 to 5. I've seen a couple of pictures of some 6, 6.5-pound mangrove snapper out there. I mean, some very good quality fish. And the best part is you can catch them on shrimp, squid. Personally, for the land-based fishermen, if I'm going to go do it, like at Lashley or Ponce de Leon, even up off the jetties up in Nokomis, I'm going to use the silverside minnows. Those silverside minnows are amazing snapper bait. I mean, they're a little tiny, skinny, almost transparent minnow. And you buy them frozen. And they break apart fairly easy. They're kind of oily, but, I mean, there's nothing like those.
Yeah, the weird part about it is the silversides, all of a sudden, a couple of guys started fishing the canals with them on their docks.
Yeah.
And they started catching a lot of snapper with them. But they didn't talk about it.
No.
It was probably, we're seeing the silverside sales going up and up, and we're ordering more and ordering more. We used to sell a few bags a year, and now we sell a case or two a week.
Right.
And this was not anything anybody did except one person telling another person who told another person. It was one of those, you know, cult type. This is my bait.
Underground speakeasy.
Yeah. This is my bait. I'm not telling anybody where it is or what I'm doing, and I'm going to keep this to me. Well, they told one buddy who said, don't tell anybody, and then he told somebody and said, don't tell anybody. And finally, the word got around that it was all about the silver sides and the mangrove snappers.
Yeah.
Now, in the harbor, my favorite place to get big mangrove snappers, big ones, would be on the Cape Hayes Bar. You go kind of go up to the shallow on the Cape Hayes Bar, find the middle of it, and then with your depth finder on, slowly, slowly idle out along the bar until you see holes or a trough in the bar or a ditch in the bar, and that holds a lot of big mangrove snappers there off Cape Hayes. The other place I like to go is directly opposite that, west of the entrance into Boquilla. On the outside of those sandbars, there's some kind of deeper pockets there, and if you can find a place where there's a cut in the sandbar going back onto the flats with that deep hole outside, another big snapper spot. I can't tell you exactly. I don't remember the GPS coordinates. I can go there, and I kind of know, all right, I'm this far off the trees, and I'm over here, and that should be there. Take me a couple minutes to find it. But those two spots in the harbor are pretty much the best two I've found. Now, up by the 41 Bridge on the Punta Gorda side, if you're looking for something, along the sidewalk they put in, and there's a seawall. Outside of the seawall, they braced it up with a whole bunch of big riprap rocks.
Right.
And some of these are 12, 14, 18-inch rocks, and some of them are smaller. But right at the base of those rocks, there seems to hold a lot of mangrove snapper there.
Yeah, it's definitely a consistent spot. For me personally, I seem to do a little bit better on that south side than I do on the southbound bridge, better than the northbound bridge. But I've got a customer that fishes the northbound on the south on the Punta Gorda side, but the northbound bridge, he does incredible down there.
I was going to say, I would, if it was me, I'm with him. I'm on that northbound bridge from there, maybe about 60, 100 feet towards Lashley Park, all along that rip rock.
Right.
There is so many, and there's Goliath grouper there, there's possible gag grouper there, you've got the snappers, you've got all kinds of stuff. Now, if you go over towards Fisherman's Village, what can you catch?
In Fisherman's Village?
No, around it, around the outside.
Oh, there's a lot of little snook hanging out all around there. You know, and of course you're going to get mangrove snapper too with them because they kind of all hang in that same little protected habitat, and there's been a lot of small glass.
Now, you can go there and have a romantic affair with a fish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Robert had an illicit affair.
I'm sitting back in my chair now.
With a fish.
Yes.
Yes, this is something you're going to see on one of those other channels where he had a fish giving him a hickey.
Yeah, a buddy caught a cobia and it had a remora on it.
He's got a picture, RJ. Have him pull a picture up to show you.
Okay.
He's got a fish giving him a hickey.
It had a remora on it, a small remora, about 6 inches long, so took it off and stuck it right to my neck. You know, it's just, if you don't know what a remora is, it's just it's those fish that you usually see hanging
good,
on sharks.
RJ. Remora has a flat spot on the top. Yeah, come on. Romantically inclined with a fish. There's no way.
We got to put that one on a website.
I'm going to. It's funny. Here he is. He's got his head tilted over. A little kind of sigh of ecstasy on his face. He's got a fish sucking on his neck. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes.
It's okay, Robert. We all have our things.
Yes. Yeah, you got to have fun with it. I mean, how many people have had that?
If that's how you want to describe it, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teach your own.
Okay.
Hey, you've got more fun stories with full moons and other stuff.
No, we're not going
to. Let's go back to topic, guys. Come on.
So, anyway, Robert goes fishing. You guys were off Fisherman's Village, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we were just fishing around the whole perimeter there, just casting, looking for some of the snook. There was some big snook there, but right after that full moon, all the big fish pretty much left out of there. So there's a lot of those. In
so
the
what were you throwing, lure
small, wise? Small thread fins.
Oh, you were just using bait.
Yeah, little bait fish. you know, nothing real big, 3 inches, 3.5 inches long.
Gotcha.
We tried a couple artificials, but no go on that.
What, you caught a, Richie caught the cobia.
Yeah.
Now, Richie, if you ever meet him, intense would be a mild word for him.
Intense, but fun.
Oh, it's, no, he's hilarious. He's literally one of my favorite customers.
One of the few people that I fish with that is super intense, but fun, because most people are intense, and they're just driven, and it's 100% focused. He's 100% focused, but jumping all over the map and having a good time with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He comes into the store, and it's just one sentence which leads to a sentence that has nothing to do with the first sentence, but has everything to do with the next sentence.
Kind of like this show.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah, I resemble that remark.
Okay. Yeah.
So
it was a nice little couple hours out
he's
there.
He's like the cobia master, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he actually treats it like musky fishing. He'll just sit there and cast and cast and cast. But he's always experimenting, too. He'll take his lure and he'd swap it out for a different color or a smaller size. You know, he changed probably 4 or 5 different lures just playing, casting, and working it real hard, real slow, dragging on the bottom, going faster, you know, and hit just some of the different channel markers out there. And
when I'm doing that, it's one of the few times when I'm searching for fish with lures that I don't mind putting a snap on the end of the line.
Right.
Now, I'm actually very particular about the snap I use, because most of the snap swivels and stuff, too big, too bulky, weigh my lure down, and even if they don't weigh it down, what they do is create a strange cavitation in front of it, or can actually make the lure go out off one way or the other a little bit. This little AFW dual lock,
D-U-A-L.
Dual, yeah, two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, D-U-A-L, dual lock, is so thin and so small that it's really even hard. It really doesn't do anything to the lure. It will actually, let's say I want to fish a Rapala X-Wrap 6 size.
Mm-hmm.
And the number 6 is so small that if you tie 25-pound test fluorocarbon leader in front of it, the knot from that leader, the knot which you have to tie it to the front of the lure,
right,
takes up most of the lip.
Yeah.
And you lose a little bit of the side-to-side wiggle, but you lose a lot of the depth.
Yeah.
So if I'm back on the flats and I'm fishing 2 feet of water, maybe a little more, a little less, I want to tie my leader directly to the front of that. Same thing with a Yozuri 3D Fingerling. The Yozuri 3D Fingerling and the Rapala X-Wrap 6 both have that tiny little lip in the front of it. And if you tie 12-pound mono directly to it, you're going to get 3 or 4 feet out of that lure.
Right.
But when you tie a 25 or 30-pound fluorocarbon leader to the front of that, it takes up so much of the lip, you lose 1 foot, 2 foot of the depth. So that makes it work better on the flats. But if I'm out in front of Fishville and I want to work those rocks, I need more of that depth out of it. So that's when I'm going to put the AFW American Fishing Wire dual lock snap on front of it. It's not a snap swivel because I don't need the swivel.
Right.
Because the lure is going to track straight. It's not going to spin. It's not going to do anything. I don't need the swivel part of it. But the dual lock snap is so small and so strong, if I'm using 15-pound braid, I've got all I need right there.
Well, and that's a key thing.
And I can change them out instantly.
Relatively, because it's pretty strong.
No, I can do it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Even an old guy like me can blind, so you have a hard time.
I struggle with it.
Yeah, but you can't see.
Those things are unbelievably strong, though, for the size that they are. Strength is on it, but it's ridiculous.
But it goes back to the reason I use AFW is because in their warehouse, they also have a medical division, and, we know about the U.S. government. I mean, government intelligence agencies, really? It's kind of like, okay, I don't know. But anyway, because they store medical supplies there, everything in the building has to pass medical certification. So it has to be 99% or better exactly what they say it's going to be. So if it says 20 pounds, they take one of those snaps apart, it better be 20 pounds.
Right.
Or they can lose their medical stuff. So they test the medical stuff, and then they test all the snaps and swivels and everything else just because they're in the same building. And I can't believe most governments would do that. You know, okay, it's not a medical supply. It's for fishing. But it's the one thing that makes AFW the best terminal tackle put on the end of the line. It is tested like it's medical-grade stuff.
So that's always good information, too. I mean, that's pretty fascinating.
But that dual lock really helps me out. Now, free fishing weekend this weekend. Let's see. I can't remember the phone number. I got to look it up here.
For a fishing license?
No, for, you know, if you've got a question you want us to answer, you can text to 941-268-6460. If you have any questions, text it to 941-268-6460, and we'll answer the questions for you. That is, when I go out to the truck and get the phone, which I forgot out in the truck.
So wonderful. Don't text anything today, boys and girls.
If you text it today, I'm probably not going to answer it till next week.
Right. Now, what else is going on this weekend that's pretty cool?
Well, mangrove snapper's number one edible fish. What's the number one fun fish out there? What's the number one catch and release fish you're going to get into?
No, I was thinking of another edible fish that opens up this weekend.
Dum, dum.
Gag grouper. Too close to the mic.
Okay. What? Well, I mean, what person calls a fish a gag grouper? I mean, you know, I understood years ago, they said Jewfish were, the meat was so incredibly white and blue and flaky, it looked kosher. And so instead of kosher fish, it came up to be Jewfish.
Oh, let me debunk that one real quick.
All right,
quick.
Go ahead.
It was the jeweled fish.
The
jeweled fish, because if you look at their body, their skin, they go to all those colored spots all over them. And the Spanish called them the jeweled fish. And I don't know what it is in Spanish, but that was the translation back, was the jeweled fish. And, of course, the Floridian shortened everything, so it became the Jewfish.
Okay. Well, I'll go with that.
And they were
one
probably saying jewel that just came out as Jew, yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with that one temporarily. But I agree with both of them because
they both work, yeah.
They both work.
Right. But gag grouper, do we know why they call it a gag grouper?
No, I have no idea.
I got to look that one up. Next week, I'll have the answer for gag grouper.
Yeah. Because I'm literally going, thinking about it, it just doesn't sound pleasant.
No, but it is one of the better eating of the grouper, personally. You know, I'm not a big connoisseur of fish, but I'll take a gag grouper over a red grouper. Plus, the other thing that makes that such a great fish, personally, you know, you let me have your boat, which is a phenomenal inshore boat, but it's not an offshore boat. Gag grouper, you can catch them inside a lot of our harbors around here. You know, Tampa Bay has a phenomenal gag grouper fishery. Charlotte Harbor is not bad. Not great, but not bad. But it's still a realistic fish to catch inshore or around the passes. You know, because it's one of the only two grouper species that actually grows up inshore. The other one being the Jewfish, or Goliath grouper, whichever one you want to call it. You know, both those species, actually, their babies grow up in the mangrove systems. So you catch them sometimes 5 miles up into the rivers, you know, sometimes even farther than that. Some
it's really weird because people don't think of gag grouper as being on the flats.
Right.
You don't think I'm going to catch grouper in 18 inches, 24 inches of water.
Right.
But now I routinely catch those around Boquilla, the north end of Pine Island, and down south of St. James City.
Right.
Right there in that quadrangle of slow, from where the Coosatchee comes out, there's that slow speed zone. Mm-hmm. Right down by Sanibel, you've got a little pass right by the beach, and then it goes up on the flats, right where the Coosatchee would come out there.
Right.
And on that flats up there, you throw a DOA cal shad in, it's a white belly with a salt and pepper clear top on it and a bright chartreuse tail, red jig head, and that salt and pepper body with the chartreuse tail, the red jig head, slow reel it across the flats. There's no jigging or jerking required. Just toss it out and reel it in slow. Whether you're up by Boquilla or whether you're down in, you know, the flats there off Sanibel, a lot of baby gag grouper, and they really fight. Now, I've never caught a legal one there, but 10 to 15 inches caught on the, in literally I'm in 18 inches of water tops.
Right, and I think people hook them more often than they think, you know, especially down there in the intercoastal. You know, you fishing around, say, the shacks or even some of those really deep cuts that are underneath those mangroves there that you showed me years ago in Pine Island. You know, they get railed by a fish and, oh, it was a big snook, because that's your first thought process, because that's where snook live. You don't associate with a gag grouper, but it's very, very feasible that you just got railed by one of them.
Oh, yeah, because there are legal gag grouper. You know, they come to Boca Raton Pass, Redfish, Captiva, all these passes, and spawn out. The eggs come back into the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they get more adult, they go back out to the outside. But right. That's why we'll have them up there. The Goliath grouper and gag grouper are two I know that grow up in the backcountry and then go out to deep water. Mangrove snappers do it, shrimp do it, tarpon do it, redfish do it, pinfish do it. I can't even, you know, the list is...
The mangroves play a huge, huge role in the baby nursery scenario. So.
And so does a lot of structure in the area. We used to dive the old CTX docks. And as you went down, you found snook along the top of the dock and some pretty big fish hanging out on the docks. Got a little further down, and there was a mix of gag grouper and juvenile Goliath grouper. And then as you got to the bottom of the docks, and we're only talking 40, 50 feet here, as you got to the bottom of the docks, there were Goliath grouper down there. Some of them could easily have swallowed you, or at least half of you into them. So,
right.
And, you, and you when, know the, what and when I the docks, go ahead.
Is I'm watching a show, and the guy's in Australia, and they're talking about these fish that would, you know, divers went down to work on this dam, and they wouldn't even go back down there. The fish was so big they could swallow them whole. And I've heard the same stories from dams all around the U.S. and the Goliath grouper that we have here. And, you know, how all these guys are terrified to go around them because, and I mean, it's worldwide.
Yeah,
this,
of course.
And the stories, you know, they hook them up with a tractor and they're pulling the tractor backwards. You take a pickup truck to the beach, take a tire off, put a rim on, and you're trying to reel in the fish with just the rim like it's no pulley system, you know. And it was dragging the truck off the blocks, you know. Come on, I mean, I didn't know that it was anything more than a U.S.
Myth or fable.
Yeah, the fables and the urban legend thing. I had no idea it was worldwide. The Australians do it, too.
Oh, yeah,
I
absolutely.
Have to guess most of the world would do that.
I went down with a photographer once from National Geographic, David Stahl, and he had his camera grabbed by one of the big groupers. He was taking a shot at it face on, and it just opened its mouth and sucked the camera in, and that was the end of that.
He didn't get it back, huh?
No, he didn't get it back. You know, didn't spit it out or anything, but...
Jeez.
Goliath grouper is such a garbage can.
It'll eat
sharks.
Anything.
They can eat lionfish, which are deadly to anything else. They swallow them. No big deal.
Yep.
They're one of the few. I don't know if anything could kill them from the inside out.
I don't think so either.
I mean, I think if they were still legal to get and I was filleting one up for food, I would take the stomach out to make moccasins out of.
That's right, yeah. Without a doubt.
I mean, that's got to be better than shark skin shoes.
You would think, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine if a creature can eat a live shark whole.
Yeah.
What is that stomach and lionfish and not die, not get punctured? That's got to be the toughest material on the planet. I mean, those shoes had to last year. Okay. So anyway, I don't know. My brain just flies out, but. Have you ever had one come up trying to eat you, RJ?
I've had them come up to me and
get the big bump.
Well, yeah, they come up to see who you are, and if you're another grouper, they're going to let you know that this is their territory, and they're going to bump you out of it. But
they make that big noise and kind of give a, and you can feel the pulse of the water come out because they got a boop.
Yep, exactly right.
It literally hits you. You feel the the pulse.
Yeah, you hear that once in a while, too, if you get out there and it's real quiet around you. You'll actually hear them thump underwater, kind of like a black drum.
Yeah, it's a weird noise. I don't know how to describe it, but it's a big pulse.
Just a thump kind of bass drum or a door closing at a good distance.
Speaking of big, big old fish. Now, if we're going to speak about big old fish and we're in May, what big old fish should we be talking about?
It's a completely non-edible fish here.
Well, it is an edible fish.
Right.
And one of the reasons they don't have them in the Amazon is a lot of people got really poor, the economy got really bad, and they went the way of the food.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to go out and catch a fish to feed your family, 100-pound fish, 2-pound fish, guess you're going for the 100-pound fish.
Yep. Tarpon.
And so we have to call it an edible fish, but absolutely illegal to keep in Florida in any circumstances, I don't think.
You can still get a permit for them, but it's to prove that you've done a world record. You know, that's the only way it can be done, but it's goofy. I don't understand it. But tarpon are the big thing right now. You know, they're mostly in Boca Grande Pass, a few in Gasparilla and Captiva Pass, but starting to get some reports of fish being up along the beaches. There were some fish that were moving along Venice Pier up to the jetties in Nokomis there. And then I'm also starting to get a few better reports of some bigger fish moving into Tampa Bay. So, you know, if you're anywhere basically on southwest Florida, south of Tampa Bay, you do have a good shot at getting into these tarpon right now.
Now, north of Gasparilla Pass, it's still kind of hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
From Tampa down to Gasparilla Pass, you're going to go there one day, there'll be 10,000 fish. You go there the next day, and there's nothing. So it's still kind of a crapshoot on whether if it's worth running north up the beaches. But it's getting a little more consistent as time goes by. What's the number one bait right now?
The one that anybody can't get, pretty much. You know, crabs are still dominating it in the passes and even out on the beaches. But thread fins are starting to move in closer to the near shore from half a mile out to a couple miles out. So they're starting to change their feeding pattern just a little tiny bit. So you can try to sabiki or cast net some thread fins or just throw a plain old simple bait buster. But the blue crabs or past crabs, you know, the past crabs you can dip once in a while, especially around the new moon, which is coming up in a couple days, or the full moon especially. But they don't stay alive for any period of time. You got to treat them like white bait. You use what you've got and release the rest when you're done. Because the rest, they'll just be dead within hours. But the amount of blue crabs that have been lacking has been the hardest part. You know, there's one guy I've been hearing about that's been working real hard down in Everglades City area and finding a handful. But from Hernando, basically, to the south of us, which Hernando's just a little bit above Tampa, nobody can find any of the small tarpon-sized blue crabs, and mostly due to rain, you know, lack of rain, I should say.
Do we think the red tide had anything to do with that?
No. Every couple of years when we get into this real extreme dry season in May, you know, the crabs need that fresh water flush to get them to move out of, because they move way back into the way back creeks. And real stagnant tide, you know, non-real tidal affected marshes and swamp areas, because there's just plenty for them to eat. So they stay way back in that stuff. But as soon as the rains start, that starts to push all that out, starts to clean out some of those back ditches and stuff, and causes those crabs to go out to that little bit higher salinity, signifying them basically the rainy season starting. And then they'll go out and hang out closer to the outer edges of the mangroves, out in the center of some of the bigger creeks, and even some will just venture out flat out throughout the whole middle of the harbor. But without rain, it's going to be very, very difficult to get any crabs at all for a little while. Now that we're going to go into starting in, what, tomorrow, I believe, they were saying that we're supposed to start getting back into a...
Yeah, we should see rain for the weekend. Yeah.
Summertime pattern kind of things kicking in, so... Well,
the second weekend of June is historically the beginning of the rainier season. We don't have a rainy season. That's gone and never coming back. But we do have a rainier season. And historically, that's second week of June.
Yeah.
And we get a little bits before that. And what's weird is people forget, we get a week of gray, rainy weather in the beginning of the year and then sometime in the fall. And it usually happens twice a year, once in the sort of springtime, early summer, and once in the fall, late fall or whatever, that we actually get rain for 3, 4, 5 days, all day, gray, drizzly.
Right.
And every time it happens, people go, oh, my God, I don't understand this. Well, when it's usually bright and sunny every day, and then we get some rain, then it goes away, you forget that there's, you know, and... So we've got 50 weeks a year, pretty dang good, and 2 weeks a year we get gray and drizzly. I bet you Ohio would trade that.
In a heartbeat.
You get 6, 8 months of dreary, gloomy weather up north sometimes.
Right.
I don't know. I'm a sun baby. I got to have, you know, if I'm not out in the sun, it just kills me.
No, I agree with you.
But that's why I have skin like an alligator. So.
True.
I went for the alligator look. Blue crabs like to bury up in the bottom. Now, why aren't we finding... We are getting calls every day from Tampa to Naples. Did you answer that? I was looking something up.
Yeah, no, I was discussing that while you were looking stuff up.
Yeah, I was trying to find answers to stuff I couldn't find, as usual. It's the interweb.
Yeah, it's a terrifying thing sometimes.
But I can't read and listen at the same time.
It's okay.
But the freshwater rain pushes them out of the very shallow areas, and they want to go out deeper where the salt is,
right.
So they'll move out of all these marshes and stuff, and that's why nobody can find them, is they're still cozy and tidy back in these little places they've been hanging out.
Yeah.
And they haven't got out in the open where people can actually find them.
Right, and some of those marsh flats, the mud is just way too thick and soft for anyone to really get in there. And those crabs will actually stay just kind of somewhat submerged in that muck, so it's even harder to find them. Even if you wanted to try to wade ankle-deep muck to try to find them, they're still going to be tricky.
All right. Black drum, another very, very edible fish. Edible sizes seem to be around the 24-inch range.
Yeah, I would say
some of the best eating right around the 24-inch range. Legal size, I think, is 14.
14? Yeah, it's 14 or 16.
Whatever. So, somewhere down there. But 20 to 26 inches seems to be the best edibility sizes for most people.
Yeah.
I like the great big ones. If I can catch them in February-ish, that to me, the big ones they've got, literally the fillets are 2-3 inches thick.
Right.
And I just cut them up, cut whatever parasites out. I usually don't find many parasites at that time of year. But I like that big, thick... It's like eating a 2-inch steak, except it's flaky like a grouper.
Right. Yeah, it's a much, much flakier meat. But the other thing is, the smaller ones are just a little bit easier to deal with when you're cleaning them. I mean, a big one can be a little tricky.
Oh, yeah. Some big ones, scales, you're like, oh, my bones. God, am I ever going to get done with this?
Yeah, it's a chore. But those smaller black drum, there's been quite a few being caught, you know, of assorted sizes in the PGI in Port Charlotte canals. The girlfriend actually caught one that I'm going to have to guess was 45 pounds behind the house the other day. It was big. It was pushing 4 foot. But she's caught a couple smaller ones.
So she's forgiven you for your affair with the remora.
She was the one taking the picture.
Oh, okay.
Roll with that one.
All right. Better life than I got. All right. Poor RJ. You're supposed to be in command and control.
Yeah, out of that, I'm not. He's not touching that one. But they've also been I've been hearing quite a few good reports for some of the smaller, good, or, you know, better eating size black drum and stump pass, and even Bull and Turtle Bay. A couple of guys have been catching some of those 16, 20, 24-inch black drum just throwing shrimp or crabs.
It's why we have Robert here, for the continuing edification of more gooder or fish.
Yeah, I stopped right. it before you I know quite what finished I
mean?
That. But
I mean,
yes.
When you turn to Robert, you're getting that expert scientific analogy that it's gooder.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm allowed to regress back to my two-year-old vocabulary
if,
once in a while.
If you're going
to
go out for gag grouper in the Gulf of Mexico, or to go find legal ones, which you're probably going to have to get in the Gulf of Mexico. You might find some in Boca Raton Pass or Captiva Pass. But anywhere up inside of there, what time... Now, here's a separate question, and I didn't get you prepped for this one because I asked you some of the other ones before we got here, but this one I just hit my head. What time of year are they in the deep holes in the harbor?
Honestly, it seems to be about this time of year when we'll get some of those mixture ports as those tarpons start to move in. And right. it seems like they follow that full moon tide in either May or June. I can't remember which time of year it was for that.
That's kind of what got in my head, is I was thinking, man, this is the time of year.
Because guys were catching by accident while tarpon fishing.
Right. So what I would be doing, if you want to check for some gag grouper in the harbor, you got a little boat, you don't want to go out in the Gulf of Mexico. Go out, nice day in the middle of the harbor. You got the 20-foot hole, the middle hole, and the Pirate Harbor hole. I would get a Rapala lure that's marked on the box that will go about 15 feet deep. Now, I'm going to use a 30-pound fluorocarbon leader, probably 4 foot long, maybe 40-pound. I guess 40-pound. And in order to get this lure to bump the bottom, you're going to have to let out a lot of line. So it's going to be quite a ways behind the boat, but you can get that one to bump the bottom. Now, the other way to do it is to get one that's going to go 20 feet and let it go down. Then you have to really short reel it back up. But the way you tell, you could get it going about 2.5 miles an hour, let your lure down. I usually will take a magic marker with me so I can mark where the line is. What I'm going to do is let that down very, very slowly under a controlled drag where the drag of the reel is holding the lure in place, but I'm going to be able to take the line and with my hand pull it out just a little bit more until I see the rod start to bounce. And what that's doing is the lip of the lure is hitting the bottom and then popping up, hitting the bottom, popping it up. Now I'm going to bring it up a half a crank to see if it doesn't bump anymore. I want this running very, very close to the bottom. And I can make a mark on the line with a magic marker at that point, right by the reel, so I know where that black mark is. So I might have to be a little above that or a little below that, but that mark's going to tell me when I go to reset again after I catch all my fish. You know, I'm going on trolling, catch a fish, I can go right back to my black mark on the line and not have to test every time. If you've got braided, you know, they sell magic markers in every color. Find one that contrasts with the color of your line. But let it out until your rod starts to hop a bit. And that means the lure is bumping the bottom. Come up a quarter turn and then maybe another quarter turn. You just want to be within a foot or so of the bottom because they're hugging that bottom out there. Now, you could do the same thing in the Gulf of Mexico, I would say.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Different stretch 30 or Rapala 30 diver or 40. Rapala's got lures that go down 40 feet nowadays.
Yeah, they do.
And a little extra line, you can get it down further than that.
Yeah, you know, if you're trolling braid, it's going to dive down a little bit deeper, and obviously the more line you let out, it's going to go a little bit deeper, but I know a couple customers that have got it dialed in with that 40 series Rapala, where they're getting it to bounce bottom in 58, 60 feet of water.
I can believe that.
Yeah, so it's cool because then you can cover a whole lot of ground and find some really new territory for, you know, small, tiny patches of reef, because that's how you find those secret spots that are out there, because some of those hard patchy bottoms are only 10 feet, some of them are 100 feet, but that's how you get those guys that find these choice little spots where they're finding grouper. And the best part about a gag grouper, and frustrating at the same time, is when you're out there trolling and you hit a fish, obviously you hit your man overboard button so you can mark your spot, find out that it was a gag grouper, then you start doing small, tight circles, like when you're trying to find a reef and you go to the center waypoint, you just start doing circles till you find all the structure. Because gag grouper are very notorious for sitting up to 100 feet away from the actual main structure.
I would say 15, 20 feet on average, but can even go further than that if they get freaked out.
Absolutely.
Where red grouper, black grouper, Goliath grouper, all them, if they get freaked out, they go into a hole in the reef. They want to go and hide.
Their home bodies.
Yeah, they got a place where they're going to go and get right up inside of the structure of the reef. But where a gag grouper, he gets freaked out, he runs out to the open water.
Right. But they're also a pretty aggressive predator. I mean, they'll come up. I mean, in some areas, you can chum them in 50, 60 feet of water and get them to come up to the surface the way you do mangrove snapper or yellowtail. Some guys have done that. But
speaking of yellowtail, not to change, ton of yellowtail out there right now.
Some really good yellowtail snapper out there.
You don't have to go to the Keys, boys and girls. No. We got as good or better yellowtail fishing right here.
I would honestly say better with what I've been hearing. You know, in the last 10 years, you know, they've called flag yellowtail down there like a pound and a half. I don't know what's up with that. Doesn't anyone know how to catch a 4 or 5 pound yellowtail anymore, or do they just not exist down there?
I don't know.
But here, these folks are going 15 to 30 miles offshore right now and catching yellowtail 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds. Donnie went out yesterday and he cleaned house on him, and I think he was at 30 miles out, according to Bob that was in earlier. But there's been some very good quality yellowtail.
Now, you can anchor up while you're out there. Once you anchor up, you get on your spot and you're fishing. And the old way we would do it was take menhaden oil and go down to Publix and find the cheapest macaroni noodles they got, whether it's bow tie macaronis, elbow macaronis, big cheap bags of, you know, macaroni noodle stuff. And then you can mix a little Jack mackerel with it, but usually what we do now, I think the most common recipe would be the noodles, a little menhaden oil, and some of the whitebait chum. And you mix it all up in a big bucket, and the noodles absorb the menhaden oil and get stuck with the chum stuff on it. And then you just take a big spoon or ladle of some kind and just dump a spoonful out of overboard, and it starts drifting down to the bottom. They start eating the macaronis. You do another spoonful and another spoonful and get them to come up to the boat. Now, a great thing to mix with your macaroni noodles is rolled oats, oatmeal. And you can get that at a feed store, very cheap for big batches of it. And that way you got little tiny flakes, you got the macaroni and elbows or bow ties or whatever you decide you're getting, and not straight spaghetti, it's too thin. It needs to be something a little heavier than that. But, and that way you got some flakes and some noodles and all that all going down, all enhanced with the menhaden oil and some of that dried chum stuff. Speaking of dry chum, James Boca Coast has a powder shaken stuff where you put your piece of bait, you cut a chunk of mullet, squid, shrimp, anything dead, you throw it in a bag, you shake it all up, gets the powder all over it, stick a hook on it, drop it down. I mean, that's got to be good for those yellowtail.
Oh, I'm sure it would be.
I mean,
it's not going to hurt you, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've
never seen chum of any kind hurt anything, but...
But coated that, right that, to the bait so that it's...
Coated right to that little piece of shrimp or glass minnow, that would be probably really, really ideal.
Because he sells the white bait chum, but he had to come up with a new formula to get it to stick to the bait better.
Right.
Because the white bait chum, you get it on the bait, but it falls off right away. This stuff actually stays with that piece of bait longer.
Sticks to it.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about that.
You know, and if you're looking for those yellowtail and you do have a nice boat, honestly, probably one of the best areas to go to, personally for me, weather pending, I would be heading down to the vicinity of the Mohawk area, which is about 30 miles southwest of Boca Grande Pass. And the only reason why I would go to that area is because you're in very close proximity to about 4 other major wrecks. You've got the Captiva Blue Hole, Charlie's Reef, Pegasus, Mohawk are the main ones I can think of real quick off the top of my head. Oh, and Twin Barges. they're all like within 6 mile radius of each other. So if one's not necessarily working out for you or there's too many people, move a little bit, because those fish use all that area as a big highway. So that would be more my type of deal, to go looking around. And also I would be trolling from one spot to the other, because they are so close. I'd be dragging a spoon or a cedar plug or like a CNH skirted bait or a billy bait, because this is the time of year where there's, at 30 miles out, there's still king mackerel out there. There's blackfin tuna. There's always the possibility of some small chicken, dolphin, or even maybe something a little bit bigger. You know, so have something to troll with while you're moving from one spot to the other, and cover some ground out there. That's one of my more favorite areas for offshore, and if I could go.
Yeah, it's 31 miles from Boca Grande Pass.
31 miles?
Yeah, on a 249.48 degree heading, 90 feet of water.
All right, so, and you got all those reefs right there, and I know they're listed on fishandfranks.com on the reefs page, so you've got all those right there in that whole vicinity listed. It's pretty good, and it's technically Lee County.
Well, the Fantastico is out a little further. That's about 46 miles out.
But the twin barges.
Yeah, Charlie, I don't have that on there. I'll go get that one and put it on there.
Right. And it's all Lee County reefs. So that's technically Lee County. And the M6 and M8 up here off of Venice is actually pretty good too. And those are in a little bit closer. I want to say those are in like 55 feet of water, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and they got some in like 20 feet of water
too.
Yeah. But there's a lot of good reefs and stuff around. It's really not a bad time to go fishing.
No.
Now, I'm going to call it from this point to the rest of the summer. Get up at daybreak. You want to be in the boat at first light. As the sun's coming up, you want to be out in that boat. Because I would be calling the trip off at noon. I'm going to be back on the dock, clean the boat, done by 1 o'clock. Because from 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock, I don't want to be on the water.
No.
Too hot, too intense, too dangerous. I've actually, gone out there at this time of year and ended up having to put a light seat cushion over my head. The sun would get so intense.
Yes.
So this is the time of year you want to fish early, early, early. In December, November, you can go out and do better if you're not on the water till 10 or 11 o'clock. You take your time. But in the summertime, you're up seeing the crack of dawn. Dawn's a plumber. You want to go see that right out there. You know, when you're there, just with that first light shining. And you really want to, you're going to do your best fishing up till 10, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So get out as early as you can. This is the time of year where you're not going for breakfast. Save that for the winter time. But right. For right now, up early. And you want to be getting back, but I want everything done by 1 o'clock.
Right, and it's a twofold thing, Number one, it's obviously because of the extreme heat, but also, like you just talked about, that second weekend in June kicks off the rainy season, and the only thing that is somewhat predictable about our rainier season is that there's going to be a thunderstorm anywhere between 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock that day, whether it's right on top of you or whether it's within a couple miles, but it can take that harbor from glass calm to 3 or 4 footers in a heartbeat, and it might only last 15 or 20 minutes, but that can be detrimental depending on the type of boat that you're in or the dock or pier that you're standing on.
And there's also an incredible amount of lightning strikes on the water.
Yes.
If you're out there in a boat, that's one of the big things you got to worry about is lightning striking somewhere within, say, 100-yard radius around you, and that's standing to your electronics. It could hurt you. So being out in a thunderstorm is not a good idea.
No. I'm more worried about that 100-centimeter range.
Right. Yeah, exactly right.
100 yards, I can live with. Hurts the ears, a little bright, but I would probably be okay. But when it hits the boat, we actually have a rod in the store that was in a rod holder on a boat. Lightning hit it, blew it to smithereens. It's a Reaper rod, and it's just the fine hair. It looks like a troll doll.
Yeah,
it really does.
It does.
And I'm going to put some googly eyes on it. I got it up in the store. I'm not even giving it back to Tim as a replacement. lightning just fried that thing. It's amazing to look at.
We were fishing for bluefish once up north off of Snug Harbor in Rhode Island, and you're using wire line, and a thunder...
Jeez, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, and a thunderstorm came by, and as you lifted the rod up out of the rod holder, it hummed. Put it back in the rod holder, it was quiet. Lifted it up again, we said, uh-oh, reel them in, boys, and we did, and sure enough, lightning strikes all around us, so... that could have been an interesting thing, having that wire line out in the water.
Never even considered stainless steel Monel line. We actually putting a rod up on the ceiling, an older one, a trolling rod, that has the old pen reel, the narrow one, with the stainless steel line on it. So if you've never seen that, you can come on in and take a look at it.
Yeah, don't fish in a thunderstorm with wire line.
Right? Yeah, it's just something I never crossed my mind.
Not once.
No, never.
Leave it to RJ to do the one weird thing with the weirdest thing possible in a thunderstorm.
Right.
That's crazy. That. Absolutely. That's why we're friends.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Snook.
Snook are doing really good. They're moving out to the passes. They're already in the passes and moving out on the beaches right now. I'm starting to get some good reports. Not tons of them, but some on the beaches for sure.
All right.
You know, the jetties are starting to load up night fishing wise. You know, they're all in that pre-spawn pattern, so get out there and chase them around. A lot of little guys, but those big fish, there's some 40, 45-inch fish moving around. It's been pretty impressive.
Okay. Well, all in all, it's a pretty good time to go fishing. If you haven't been in Fish and Franks for a while, you might want to stop down. We made a lot of changes. We even have
a boutique.
Yeah, we actually have a boutique area.
It's the Disneyland of fishing. That was my impression. And you got to go check out the mural.
You hadn't seen it.
I hadn't seen it. That mural just blew me away. You got to find the blind tarpon, and you got to find the word pen.
Yeah, if you can find the word pen, you've done well. And it's written out about 8-inch tall letters. I challenge you to find it on the mural. And Strike King's up there, Shimano's up there, Yozuri's up there, Rapala's up there, American Fishing Wire, our friends are up there. A lot of people helped make all those changes possible. And all the stainless steel fish.
Yes.
The largest collection of stainless steel fish anywhere.
3D stainless steel fish.
It's pretty cool. Stop by, say hi, check us out.